Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. We are back. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Vincent Goodwell is joining us this morning.
Vinny, thank you for last week, brother, helping us out. Appreciate you.
Hope you learned something.
What would I have learned? Oh, no, I didn't. I mean, I couldn't watch. I was out of the country. But I hear on good authority you did a wonderful job, which, I'll be honest, was a little shocking, but I'm glad to hear it.
Oh, that's
it's good
not
to,
great.
It's good to have you here today.
Can I say the tan looks fantastic on you?
Thank you so much, Jenna. You look well rested.
Thank you.
Hope you have a wonderful week as well.
You too. And that's where the compliments will end, because we got a full Monday slate to get to. And we're going to start with the game that lived up to its big billing, the Lakers and the Celtics. And here we go. The rivalry dating back years between these two teams. And we'll pick this up late, 30 seconds to play. Lakers down one, and LeBron turns around, nails the 15-footer. He finished with 29 points, 8 boards, 9 assists. That was probably the most important bucket of the game. 7 seconds to go. Lakers up by 2. Anthony Davis misses the free throw. Celtics going the other way. A chance to win or tie. But Jason Tatum called for the offensive foul with less than a second to go. Huge, huge day for Tatum. He couldn't believe it, though. The shot didn't get off in time anyway. Lakers escape with the 2-point win. All right, let's dive in and break it down. Nick, start with you. Were you impressed by the Lakers, or were you worried that Tatum almost single-handedly beat this team yesterday?
Well, what is there not to be impressed with the Lakers at this point? Listen, Jason Tatum was sensational and good for him. His second career 40-point game, one came earlier this year, I think, against the Pelicans. He continues to be a guy that looks like one day could be one of the 15 best players in basketball, maybe one day be one of the 10 best players in basketball. He's not yet a star, but he is trending that way. And great game by him when the Celtics didn't have Kemba Walker. But the Celtics are a really good team, an overachieving team, and a team that is exactly where they are most comfortable the last 30 years if they don't have Kevin Garnett, overachieving with a defined ceiling. And they played really well last night, or yesterday afternoon. But of course, I should be impressed by the Lakers. They have the best player in the conference by a mile. They have the defensive player of the year, probably. Maybe Giannis will win it, but I think Anthony Davis will. They have the best record in the conference by a mile. They have the best closer in all of basketball by a mile. And by the way, I don't know if anyone cares, because I know we have been told the regular season no longer matters. It's just foolishness. Who gives a damn? They have the longest winning streak in basketball right now, crossing over before the All-Star break and since the All-Star break. The Lakers' path to winning a championship, Vince, is LeBron and Anthony Davis play great. And last night, LeBron and Anthony Davis, 29 plus 32, you carry the one. That's 61 combined points. They, I think, scored every single point for the Lakers in the final 8 minutes. So I don't know what there is not to be impressed with, and I don't know why people would be concerned that a good to very good Boston team gave them a hell of a game on national television yesterday afternoon.
Well, I would actually tend to agree with you, but there are some caveats here.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, Nick. Are you a letter of the law person or a spirit of the law person?
I'm a spirit of the law person.
Okay, if you're a spirit of the law person, then some of the refereeing yesterday left a lot to be desired. You don't give a technical to Brad Stevens because he's out of the coaching box and everything else with that length of time left.
Agreed. And Anthony Davis missed that free throw, right?
The point of it.
Agreed.
Right? And the out of bounds play that went off of Anthony Davis's tip of the tip of his fingertips. I'm not going to be too upset about that. Those things happen. And I tend to agree with you that the Lakers, the name of the game is to win games, especially as you're getting out of the All-Star break. I'm not one for style points, but I am one for defined roles. There are some things that I saw that I liked with the Lakers that have answered some questions for me. And Nick, you're not going to like some of the things that I'm saying, because it doesn't give you the ammunition for my quote-unquote anti-Lakers agenda. But the way that they defended Tatum in the last 6 minutes, where defensively they zoned up a little bit, they got him at the top of the key, Kuzma played with length, LeBron was there off the ball. Like, they're starting to get a little bit of identity defensively, where even if a guy is hot, you can start looking at them and saying, okay, we have a strategy to be able to shut these guys down late. Now, LeBron being a closer, I don't know about that, because closers have to be able to make free throws consistently late in games. And LeBron is still, at this point, surprisingly, still tinkering with how he wants to shoot free throws at the line with his form and everything else, the jumpers and everything. I thought he was defended pretty well by Jaylen Brown late. And those are the type of defenses that he's going to see in the playoffs. So I'm going to tend to agree with you. But if Boston had Kemba Walker yesterday, that could be a completely different ball game, at least in the last 6 minutes, because you have more than one shot creator.
And Tatum didn't. I think he scored his 41st point with a shade over 3 minutes left, and he ended with 41. So he obviously, you mentioned the final 6 minutes, final 3 minutes, shut down entirely. And people, whether or not that was an offensive foul on Jason Tatum, as Jenna mentioned, doesn't much matter. The shot's no good either way.
Well, the KCP play before that, where he was pushed out of bounds, that caused a technical foul, that was one that should have been going his way with the game still in the balance.
If there's a question of, was the officiating poor at the end of the game, I would say yes. If there's a question of, did the officiating cost the Celtics the win, I would say there's no way to know that. It probably late in the game went 60-40 in the Lakers' favor, but I don't know what would have happened had the calls gone the other way. What I do know is the Kemba Walker point, which I think is the spirit of Jenna's question, which is the Celtics are without their some would say their best player, probably up to this point this year, their second best player, because Tatum's played so well, and they play that close. In the NBA, for a game, missing your guy or one of your guys very often doesn't hurt you that much. It's over the long stretch of time. Now, there are certain teams that cannot play without their guy. The Celtics aren't one of them. The Celtics are a team that for the last few years have had too many quality role players, right? Too many guys that probably need minutes. So it's not shocking to me that without Kemba Walker that they were able to play really well yesterday, because it means more shots for Tatum when he's playing really well. It meant more shots for Gordon Hayward, which obviously didn't work out well for them in that regard. But over the course, if these teams played in the finals, which they won't, but if they did, if Kemba Walker's out for the series, then obviously the Celtics have 0% chance. They'd have 0% chance anyway, but they would have a better chance if he played over the course of a series. One game, though, I think is not a fair representation of that.
Frank Vogel said after the game, he liked the fact that the Lakers won this kind of game, a close game, a really intense game, perhaps like a playoff tune-up, if you will. How much do you think the Lakers actually... Look, I think if the Celtics won, it would have been a bigger deal than had the Lakers won. But how much did they need a game that came down to the wire that really pushed them, you know, now two wins after the break?
I think it starts to build a level of trust, not necessarily with the players with each other, but also from the players to the coaching staff. When you have to change up your strategy late and you have to zone up because a guy's got 39 and you're afraid that he's going to get 50, you're going to have to believe in the schemes and some of the other things that aren't necessary, that you're not necessarily inclined to believe in during a regular situation. And it puts LeBron and Anthony Davis in situations where they have to rely on each other. They have to basically play a two-man basketball. Anthony Davis didn't play well on the inside in the fourth quarter, but from the outside, he was hitting jumpers. He was getting to the lane. He'll get calls. Those things will matter. So I do think in terms of a playoff tune-up, in terms of defining roles and stuff, I do think that was a positive.
But there's going to be a segment of the basketball population, of fans, some media, whomever, that no matter what the Lakers do throughout the regular season and throughout the first round of the playoffs and throughout the second round of the playoffs and then throughout the third round of the playoffs until we get to game 6 of the NBA Finals where the Lakers are up 3-2 on Milwaukee, that...
Why even play the games, Nick? Goodness.
But with the Lakers. I will never understand it, why there was this narrative push when you have the reigning best player of the last... well, ever, and the best player who has been consistently the best player in the league over the last decade, paired up with one of the best young big men in basketball, and one of the best young players in basketball, young-ish players, Anthony Davis. The narrative going into the season was, yeah, they'll be good, but the team across town with the Clippers, they will be great. And all year long, we've heard these different levels of reasons to discount what the Lakers are doing. The beginning of the year was something I'd never heard, Vincent. It was a Mac football question. It was, you know what, their strength of schedule isn't good enough. Then it was, well, actually, they're trying too hard early. And now that those things are by the wayside, it's, well, these things actually don't matter. The regular season, it's foolishness. And now it is... close wins where the best player in the world hits the game winner, it's actually a bad sign. It's a bad sign LeBron hit that jump shot because he missed the free throw before and they should have been up 7. So we're just going to continue to change the rules for one team in LA and do the exact opposite on the other team in LA, which is no matter how many spots they are behind the Lakers, no matter how many losses they rack up, oh, they'll be fine because they have Kawhi Leonard. And it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out over the next
few months. I was almost with you. Nick, you were right there. You had come in this morning with like a dose of act right.
Uh-huh.
And then you come in and play with this victim mentality.
There's no victim mentality.
Yes, yeah, Nick, you have started it. The entire world is against the Lakers, the number one market, the number one franchise, the sentimental favorite. You have created this fantasy world where nobody wants the Lakers and by proxy LeBron to win, when that is nowhere near the case. Nobody wants to see the Clippers in the NBA Finals. That's not the heritage franchise of the NBA. Oh. Nobody's creating excuses for them.
Oh, okay.
I know we're going to get into that a little bit later, but you can't play it's too early to play the victim mentality.
I'm not playing
it's
the victim mentality.
It's a little early.
I love it. I love the fact that somehow the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis get to legitimately tell themselves, guys, people really don't believe in us. I think it's great to believe.
Nobody's saying that.
Have you ever had muscle pain? I'm talking stop you in your tracks. I'll never work out again. What am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Their handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to Theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, our listeners get a free charging stand with a purchase, a $79 value. That's Theragun.com/cadence, Theragun.com/cadence.
Bucks hosting the 76ers on Saturday.
Oh,
last week,
showing highlights.
Joel Embiid said he was the best player in the world. Giannis Antetokounmpo had something to say about that. The Greek freak going off for 31, 17, and 8 as his Bucks crushed Embiid's Sixers by 21 points. As for Embiid, he finished with 17, went 5 for 18 from the field, and after the game, Giannis added insult to injury, calling himself the best player in the world. Vinny, what message do you think Giannis sent here?
He sent the message that Saturday was Saturday, because this is what he does all the time.
Yeah.
Prove that he's the best player in the world. Look, Nick, I know you choose not to believe it.
No, I'm into that. Listen, LeBron can be the greatest player ever, and Giannis can still be the best player right now. I'm not going to push back on you on it.
No, he's actually been on that corner.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah, but go ahead.
Okay, fine. I think
because there goes my point.
No, it's not that. No, right. I'll still educate Nick. It's just different.
Oh, okay.
It's just different levels of it. I think Giannis has shown subtle growth in his game this year, and I don't think that he takes too kindly to Joel Embiid having one good game and saying I'm the best player in the world now. Like I don't think he sees it that way. Giannis has a confidence about himself. Like we make Giannis out to be humble, quiet Nigerian Greek kid that doesn't really believe in himself in that way, and that is not the case at all. Like this guy carries himself with the swagger of, hey, I don't need another superstar with me. I can take on LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard. Like this guy's light work. Like Joel Embiid is very much light work to a guy like Giannis. And maybe the Bucks get to the finals and we get to see player against player. But I think Giannis has long proven this season that this is basically validated last year's MVP year, and that he's here and he's going to be on a run, I think, for the next 3 or 4 years where he can rack up a lot of MVPs.
So what it says about the message he sent was, Joel, you're not in my class. The only class of mine that you're in is my weight class, and that one, you just got bumped down.
And that fluctuates.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joel's one of the 12 best players in basketball. Mm-hmm. But Giannis, it is much like with Zion a moment ago. Mm-hmm. We were talking before the show, pull back the curtain a bit. What's the interesting way to talk about Zion? Because the team's probably not going to make the playoffs, and he's just so dominant. It's like nobody's going to have the take of Zion's not good. So how can we... Giannis's greatness is numbing because you mentioned he does it every night. People say, no, well, 31, 17, and 8 in 30 minutes. Well, he's giving you 30, 14, and 6 in 31 minutes. That's his average. So 31, 17, and 8 in 30 minutes ain't no big departure from it. One more point, couple more rebounds, couple more assists in one fewer minute. That's what he does every single night. He is in the midst of, Jenna, what will go down as one of the greatest regular seasons ever. I mean, off the top of my head, if we talk modern era, Jordan in 96 doing everything he did for the 72-win Bulls the year after they had lost to the Magic, the year the NBA burnt the tapes because Jordan never lost in the playoffs, we remember. Shaq's utterly dominant year, one of the years the Lakers won during the three-peat.
The first year.
The LeBron's third year in Miami, their second title year, the year that he was one vote away from winning unanimous MVP. Steph's unanimous MVP year with the 73 wins. And this Giannis season, the greatest PER ever, 30-14-6 in 31 minutes. Think about that. 2 years ago, Jenna, he was a superstar, giving you 27-10-5 in 37 minutes, right? So this is why he can say he's the best player in the world. Joel saying it is laughable. And there is no one on a night-in, night-out basis, including LeBron. Now, we'll see what happens in the postseason. But throughout the last 2 years, there has been no one in the regular season on this guy's level. And he's rewriting the statistical record books on a minute-per-game basis. On a points-per-minute basis, right, if you will. And it is... And his team's going to win 70 games, maybe, without another star on it. Chris Middleton's a good, very good player, but not another star. It's unbelievable what he's doing.
So let me ask you guys a question. Let's bring up Patrick Mahomes. We talk so much about what an incredible first start to his career Patrick Mahomes has had. The next logical step was winning the Super Bowl. He almost had to win it to back up everything he had done. Giannis is fantastic. No one's going to argue that. He's going to win another MVP, maybe two, maybe three, who knows. But doesn't he kind of have to get to the finals this year in order for this to remain a trajectory and not to be a, like what would we be saying about Mahomes if he didn't get to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think there's no shame in losing to the best player in the world that he did last year in Kawhi. But I think it was a learning moment for him in a way that we haven't seen superstars have learning moments against their direct counterparts in a playoff situation where the guy playing opposite of you shut you down in four straight games and pretty much, you know, humbled an MVP. But no, here's the thing. We're not giving the Bucks much of a chance to win the NBA title. Like, we don't talk about them in the same way we talk about Lakers and Clippers being championship contenders. Like, we may assume that they're going to be there in a certain way, but we don't give them, I don't think you give them much of a chance against the Lakers. Not the way that you talk, Nick.
You're shockingly wrong again.
Was Nick just stuttering there?
No, because for as often as you're on the show, you should listen more often to it, because the Bucks have been...
They love each other.
For 2 years, last year, I declared middle of the playoffs, Giannis the best player in the world, and said I thought they'd win the title. Obviously, it didn't happen. This year, going into the season, said Giannis was going to win the MVP again. They were going to come close to 70 wins, and they would lose in a close NBA Finals to the Lakers. If I think they're going to lose in a close NBA Finals, of course they can win the title. What I was saying earlier about the Clippers propaganda machine, the idea that the Clippers have any argument to be in the discussion with the Milwaukee Bucks up to this point in the season is ludicrous. Now, to Jenna's point, if they make the Finals and lose, then you're correct. The trajectory has continued in a positive way. The pressure on Milwaukee is because Giannis has been so sensational, because he's going to win the MVP, and you have a vote, correct?
Yes.
It should be unanimous. I don't know if he will be unanimous. It's only happened once, obviously, with Steph. He should be the unanimous MVP. If they don't make the Finals, then, especially because who will they have lost to? Toronto team that for the second straight year, but this year without Kawhi. A Boston team that doesn't have a superstar on the roster. A Miami team that's overachieving. A Philly team that's underachieving. Like, so one of those teams would have to beat them.
Right.
Then you start to be concerned. Well, what is it? Budenholzer? Is it something with Giannis? Does he need to leave?
Right.
That is the kind of the elephant in the room for this team. But we look at, and this is the last point I'll make, we look at Wilt's 50-point-per-game season as an untouchable, impossible, almost cartoonish year. He gave you 50-26-2 in 48.5 minutes a game. He played the entirety of every game, never fouled out, played some overtimes. Giannis, if you were playing those minutes, would be giving you 47-21-9 in 2020.
Wow.
It is what he's doing is unprecedented in modern or historic basketball history.
On to the most hyped heavyweight fight in years now, Wilder Fury 2, the rematch. And this time, Tyson Fury was able to do what he couldn't do the first time around. Fury knocked down Wilder with a right in the third. Then two rounds later, did it again, this time with a body shot. And finally, in the seventh, Wilder's corner had enough, throwing in the towel for Fury. An unbelievable comeback story ends in victory. Nick, how surprised were you with how this fight went down?
Well, listen, I was shocked. It cost me a bucket of money. I had bet the fight before I left the country through with my friends at Fox Bet. I then, of course, while I'm out of the country at a nice little international gambling establishment, the fight's about to come on, I bet the fight again because I thought Deontay Wilder was going to win. And not only did he not win, Greg, he got annihilated. That fight was over in the third round. He was out on his feet in the third round. And then from that moment forward, you had to start to be pretty concerned for him. There was a moment in the fifth round where I said to my wife, who was watching with me from the spot where we were, that if he doesn't get knocked out, and I didn't think he was going to get knocked out because Wilder's so tough and he kept getting up, this is the type of fight that changes the trajectory of your career, does damage to you that you do not recover from. And it went on a couple rounds after that. I thought what Fury did, and listen, I am not an X's and O's boxing analyst, but I love the sport. I've always loved the sport. We don't talk about it because there's not often fights quite this big. What Fury was able to do in identifying clearly before the fight where Wilder's defensive weaknesses were, exploiting them. Fury switching up his stance a few times mid-fight, then switching back. Wilder had no answer and was just, I thought Fury won every single round. You could argue maybe Wilder barely won the second, but probably not. It was a total, thorough domination that the only critique I would have had is it maybe should have ended earlier. That the corner maybe should have thrown the towel earlier, it should have been called earlier, because Wilder was done by the middle of the fourth round without any question.
I was thoroughly surprised. And I was more surprised from a standpoint of this. Boxers, I'll just look at Wilder. Wilder, he's a puncher. Fury, he's a boxer. And we saw him box. And we saw Wilder try to punch a boxer. And what I didn't like is when you possess so much skill, so much talent, so much power in your punches, it forces you to rely on that more than it does anything else. And what I mean by that is I didn't see Wilder come out wanting to be a boxer and honing his craft. And that's, as an athlete, as a competitor, you know, and Fury knew it. Going into it, we saw him pregame, we saw him leading up to the fight. He was so comfortable and so relaxed because he knew, dude, I got it. There's so much that I've studied and watched that I am going to outbox this guy.
Which is amazing because, I mean, obviously neither of these guys had ever lost. It's not like he was fighting a guy who someone else had exploited these weaknesses against. The only time Wilder hadn't won a fight was the one against Fury the last time.
Yes.
When Wilder, I thought, knocked him out cold in the 12th round, and then Fury did the Undertaker at the sixth count and somehow got up to salvage the draw.
All right, we saw the match. We saw the rematch. How badly do you want to see these guys do this again for a third time?
I'm really curious what you think about this, Greg, because going into this fight, I would have said there is nothing that could happen that would not make me want to see part three. That if one of them gets knocked out in the first round, if it goes, no matter what, I'm going to want to see part three because nobody could be up 2-0 because the first one was a draw. So we would need a part three. Man, I watched this and I said, I'll watch it if there is, but I don't I don't think there's a need for
a
third.
No, see it.
And if and Wilder, I know, can activate an option to get a third, to get a rematch. It was in the fight contract. I mean, if I'm Wilder's people, you got to find a reason to not do it, an explanation. And by the way, I do not like Tyson Fury at all, and I adore Deontay Wilder. His story is amazing. I sat with him and talked with him 6 years ago at the Super Bowl, right when he had, yeah, it was 6 years ago. It was a long time ago when he was kind of coming on it. He is an, I love him, but he can't, this is the what we saw Saturday night, there is no reason to believe it would go differently if they fought 10 times. Unless you hit him, it's heavyweight boxing, so you can always hit him with one. But I mean, to me, Fury was that dominant that I don't know that we even need a third one.
Yeah, I'm with you. He was so tactical, Fury was, to where you don't believe that there's anything that Deontay Wilder could do to surmount that, to trump it. And for me, it's Wilder knew it. Wilder knew it the entire fight, specifically from the second round on. It was like, oh, shoot, I have to get a paw on this guy or I'm not going to be able to beat him. Mm-hmm. And you could see it. You could sense it. And once Fury senses it, once your competitor senses it, it's over.
It's over.
And I truly believe, like you, there is no need for a third fight.
I remember when the Niners played the Packers in the regular season, and I came here on the show the next day and I said, the Packers can make the Super Bowl, but they need someone to beat the Niners for them. I then foolishly picked the Packers to beat the Niners because I'm an idiot. But there was just what one team was good at.
To beat.
So what? Listen, for Wilder, Fury Joshua is now the fight everyone wants to see.
Yep.
It would be the biggest fight in the history of British boxing. It would unify all the belts. What Wilder in his heart, whether he'll say it or not, is hoping Anthony Joshua win that fight, and then Wilder takes on Joshua, and maybe that's stylistically different. I don't see how Wilder can overcome what just happened on Saturday against Fury.
Talk some Tom Brady and where things stand with his NFL future. According to Ben Volin of the Boston Globe, Brady seems to be enjoying the leverage that comes with being an unrestricted free agent. Volin reports that teams looking for a quarterback, particularly the Chargers, the Raiders, the Bucks, all waiting on Brady before turning their attention to guys like Teddy Bridgewater and Ryan Tannehill or even Cam Newton. All right, Nick, who do you think's got more leverage here, Brady or the New England Patriots?
Oh, I think Patriots have no leverage. None. What's their leverage? Tom, we're going to move on? Okay. I've been preparing for that. Go ahead, Jenna.
Well, I was just going to say, they know what Tom wants. What if they just give it to him?
Then
the leverage?
That's not the leverage. Yeah. If we're in a negotiation and I say, I want this, and you say, okay, you can have all of this, because I have the leverage.
I never knew how leverage works.
Okay, yeah. This is why other people negotiate their contracts.
Yeah,
for you,
leverage.
Jenna.
I totally understand.
This is why Brady getting the Patriots to add, when they wouldn't give him the extension, but they redid his deal to give him a salary bump and one important proviso in his previous year contract, which is you can't franchise tag me. That's where the leverage comes from. The Patriots can't franchise tag him and say it's here or nowhere. Because of that, and because the Patriots have no one waiting in the wings, and because he knows also they got a $14 million dead money cap hit on from my deal that comes into effect the first day of the league year if they don't give me a new deal, he has all the cards. The only card they have is what? That we give you the best option to win? But I don't know if they do. And last year it certainly didn't look like they did. And they can't provide him with those better options prior to the open of free agency. They can't go to him and say, unless they're going to say, hey, we've signed X, Y, we've signed A.J. Green, because free agency hasn't started yet. So by the time they can start making moves to impress Tom Brady, he can start taking meetings. So to me, Tom has all the leverage here, Greg.
You hit it right on the nail right on the head. Two reasons. Franchise tag, can't use it on Tom Brady. It's not an option. As well as he knows what they want. They don't quite know what he wants as far as what he's looking to do in this phase of his career. And why that is so important is because, okay, he's won. We know he wants to win, But how badly does he really want to win versus being in a situation that he can now foster and continue whatever he decides to do that he's thinking of and his family is thinking of in advancing that situation in those circumstances?
Right.
They don't know that. They don't know that dynamic. Also, when you look at Tom Brady and experiencing this for the first time.
Right.
He's going to have the leverage because now I'm going to make sure I see and do what I want, how I want it. And what that means is, yes, I'm going to entertain every option. I've watched for years.
Other guys.
I've watched for years. Other guys have this opportunity. And now I have this opportunity and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yes, he has all the leverage.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Who needs who more in this relationship? After the Patriots saw what Brady was able to do, Brady knows everything he has that comes with being in an organization for 20 years. Who needs who more?
Well, I believe the Patriots right now today need Tom more than he needs them, but that could change immediately if they were to go trade for Cam Newton. If they were to acquire Andy Dalton, who I don't think Andy Dalton's terrible. I think Andy Dalton is, you know, probably like right now the 19th best quarterback in football. So I think when they currently have Jared Stidham and no one else, they need him because you're not going to be able to compete with Jared Stidham in year two as your quarterback. So to me, currently the Patriots need Brady more than he needs them, because the other element of this that is being totally underrated in the reporting of the story is the fact that we are in a very odd year as far as the number of teams that have openings at quarterback. I looked at it last week. 3 years ago, you had 29 of your 32 teams that would have said, we're happy with our quarterback, either because they had just drafted a guy or these older guys who are now coming up on a deal were all firmly entrenched. Now you've got, how many teams don't even know who their quarterback is? Tennessee doesn't, Tampa doesn't, Oakland doesn't,
New
the Chargers
England
doesn't,
really know.
New England doesn't. Some people would say Indy is ambivalent, and you could probably add a few other, Cincinnati we say does because of Burrow, and
right.
Miami
right.
does because they're going to draft. There's a lot of, a quarter of the league theoretically has an opening. So this would be different if Brady were flirting around, and it's like, man, there's two teams that are in the market, they both stink, we know you're not going there. That is not the situation they find themselves in.
So for me, this is where I flip. I think Tom Brady needs the Patriots more. And it's for completely different reasons than what anyone probably would think. When you are a free agent and you have the option to go where you please, one of the things you can't gauge is the culture and the mentality that that organization has and the guys in that locker room have. What he does know is that the culture and the winning ways is already established. The mentality is already there with New England and with everyone in that organization. If I go anywhere else,
and you experience
I'm hoping
that,
that that's the
right?
case.
Going
from Green Bay to Minnesota, and then from Minnesota to the Dolphins, culture changes every time I moved. And it was so drastically different from going to an organization that understood what they wanted, understood how to get it in Green Bay and how to win, and we had the mental makeup of guys that wanted to do it. Winning is different for everyone else.
Yep.
When in the Patriots locker room, winning is Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Winning for Tampa Bay or the Chargers,
it's making
the playoffs.
Right.
That's different now, and you don't know. Everyone's going to say, if we add you, we have this opportunity. But that doesn't change everyone's mental makeup.
Plus the parking spot. He gets a parking spot.
I now finally understand why when Jenna's kids get in trouble, they get seven chances. Because Jenna thinks they have all the leverage. They're like, what can I do?
Yes.
They've got all the leverage.
That's smart. I learned leverage today. Back here with Vincent Goodwill. Vinny, we're talking Clippers. They lost to the Sacramento Kings on Saturday. They have now lost three straight for the first time all season. And also seemingly for the first time this season, we saw some frustration from Kawhi Leonard on the court. Though he could have been happy. It's hard to tell, really, with the guy. The Clippers are now in third place in the West, 6.5 games back of the Lakers. Here's more now from Kawhi after that loss.
At what point do you need to start seeing things come together, or at what point does concern start to build up at all?
You never know what could happen. But the time is now. Just got to keep getting better. It doesn't matter what seed you are. You just got to keep fighting. And, you know, it's about, you know, the right team peaking at the right time. So I don't think we even got there yet.
Kawhi's kind of calling out the Clippers there. What did you make of what he had to say, Nick?
Oh, it was very fascinating. A little 24 hours in Los Angeles. First of all, what he said is wrong. The NBA is not about the right team peaking at the right time. That's the NFL. The NBA is not about that. The NFL typically is. The NBA is typically about the best team. Best team usually wins. There are outlier years. Last year's an outlier year. Raptors won because the best team got hurt. Previous 2, 3, 4, keep going. 9 of the last 11, the best team won. 2 of the years, you could say injuries determined it. 1 of the years, LeBron was the best player on the best team in Miami, and he had a horrific NBA Finals, and the Mavs came in the back door. But usually it's about the best team. But you can't say that when you're like the 6th best team in the NBA, so you say it's about peaking at the right time. But can we show the clip of Kawhi? Because that was a very fascinating moment that you pointed out, Jenna. Kawhi Leonard showing frustration, because I think this is a very telling moment. And so here's Kawhi, last moments of a late game. There's a miscommunication. He's very upset. Vinny, you watch a lot of basketball. Who does who does that remind you of? Who does that look like? It's an honest question, because it reminds me of someone.
Who is that? What, LeBron?
Yeah, that we've seen LeBron do that for years, right? And it's almost like, once you have the pressure of some people saying, erroneously, but saying, you're the best player in the world, and the pressure of, oh man, one of my teammates is hurt, and another one of my teammates isn't back yet, and some other guys are underachieving and not playing up to my standard.
We've gone through 28 lineups.
Oh, it's almost like it's a little harder to just be stoic, cool, calm, and collected, because you're starting to realize, oh no, if the team fails, it's all going to be blamed on me. And you can't be robotic, and you can't be stoic, and the emotion starts to seep through. And I think Kawhi is feeling the pressure, because they've decided to play this year like it don't matter. And now it's going to be very interesting when they end up, as I said before the season, as the 4 seed, how much it doesn't matter that they've punted on the regular season. And by the way, they lost 4 of the last 5. The one they won, oddly enough, Kawhi didn't play. So they lost 4 in a row with Kawhi. But he's the best player in the world. You said that earlier. You said last year he was the best player in the world, that Giannis lost to him. So I'm sure you think they'll figure it out. I know you think they're going to win the title. And then I'm crazy. I'm sure that you have a ton of evidence from the 2019-20 NBA season to back that up. But Kawhi seems to be a little less confident than you, Vinny. So go ahead.
Can you guys pull up that play again, the one play where Kawhi showed up all the frustration?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple explanation for this.
Yeah.
He wanted Landry Shamet to go to the basket.
Yeah.
He was saying, go to the basket. There's no big macro, oh, I can't do this by myself thing that you want to extrapolate on him. It's a simple basketball play, Nick.
That happen a lot?
Nick,
that guys don't make cuts they're supposed to make?
No, it happens in this game where 3 is worth more than 2, and sometimes you don't take the bird in the hand. And Kawhi, and with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you want to get 2 points on the board on a 3-on-1 fast break. It makes all the basketball sense
of
in the world.
Of course.
But because of your anti-Clippers agenda, you want to make it bigger than what it is.
The pass going out of bounds is not a big deal. Maybe I don't watch enough basketball. I feel like I watch all of it. Have you seen Kawhi do that a lot? Because I haven't. Maybe I have a different league pass. I've seen a lot of time plays, Vinny, go awry because an inferior player makes a mistake.
So when LeBron does it, it's you guys aren't playing up to my level of standard.
No.
When Kawhi does
the pressure is
way too much for me, as opposed to it just being a guy not cutting to the basket on a 3-on-1.
Was it odd?
I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. No. You've ever played basketball before on the court and a guy doesn't cut to the basket?
Vinny.
It happens.
Vinny, you're too smart to act like you don't understand the question I'm asking. Was it odd to you to see Kawhi react like
no.
that. So, okay, so then I haven't been watching.
It's a human emotion, and you're trying to extrapolate and make it on something that is not. And I will disagree.
Kawhi does show a lot of human emotion.
And I will disagree with you on saying about teams not peaking at the right time, because his team last year peaked at the right time. His first championship was the Spurs peaking at the right time. They had the best record, but they were playing better going into the playoffs.
You just glossed that all over real quick. His first championship, who had the best record in the NBA that year?
The Spurs did.
Oh, okay. So the best team won that year, right?
Yes, you can have the best.
And last year,
Wait, Nicholas. Don't do that. You can have the best record and not be the best team.
Yes,
going
yes,
into but, it.
Okay.
Okay. So, but they were playing better as the playoffs progressed, and it went to a crescendo against the Heat in the finals, where they steamrolled Miami.
There's a lot of examples in NBA history of a 5 seed getting hot and winning the title. Oh wait, there's none. But I understand.
Do you think they're going to be a 5 seed? Call your shot now.
I said before the year, they're the 4 seed. Why would I change it when right now they're tied? Let me look. Hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. One game up. If they lose tonight to the Grizzlies, Vinny.
Are they losing tonight?
Hold on.
Are they losing?
Probably not. I don't think they'll lose to the Grizzlies.
Okay.
But if they lose tonight to the Grizzlies, the gap between the Lakers and the Clippers will be the exact same in losses, 12-20, as the gap between the Clippers and the Grizzlies.
And guess what happens in the playoffs, Nick? You can't carry
they
that
reseed.
With you. It's totally random.
You start at nothing. You start zero,
and we go to the 10 best players on the floor, and we say, with 5 minutes left in the game, who can stop who? I have Paul George. I have Kawhi Leonard. You have Anthony Davis and LeBron, and we go from there. Not saying me or you, but I'm saying team against team.
No, I got it. But they got to get to the Lakers, and that's probably not going to happen. You have the Clippers going to the finals?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, so listen, we have been watching. It's very interesting because, and we got to talk, maybe this is why NBA ratings are down, is different people, Vinny and I live in different parts of New York City, different boroughs are getting different feeds. He's getting a feed where Kawhi has been super emotional and the Clippers have been great. I'm getting a feed where the Clippers have been underachieving and we're finally seeing frustration boil over. It's hard to have... Maybe that's the issue. Maybe if they combine your ratings and my ratings together, the NBA ratings are back up.
Or maybe you're the master of narrative, and although your arguments are complete, all your arguments are accurate, they're incomplete.
Always. Let's talk NFL. Greg, we're talking about your former quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. At 36 years old, you're not going to find too many people who think his window is closed. Don't forget, though, Brett Favre was even younger than Aaron Rodgers when the team drafted Rodgers. Now, according to Green Bay's GM, the team will not rule out taking a quarterback in the first round of this year's draft. Greg, you were there for the transition from Favre to Rodgers. Do you think the Packers should already be thinking about life after Aaron Rodgers?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There is no other position in football that you're not thinking life after that individual. Whether it's receiver, whether it's defensive end, whether it's linebacker, whether it's offensive lineman.
But it's Aaron Rodgers.
He's a guy that has gone down in the past, and we've seen the play of the Green Bay Packers non-existence offensively. So, yes, if you're trying to establish winning ways and you talk about the next man up philosophy, which every team in sport talks about, you have to do this. He was a guy that was drafted. Obviously, he wanted to be drafted higher. He fell down to the Green Bay Packers. Brett Favre was still there. He had to wait his turn, but he had an opportunity to learn from a guy, whether they had a great relationship or not. You were in the room. You saw him work. You saw how things were operated. You were able to draw those experiences and add a little bit to your game, which helped him become the player that we now see. I wouldn't see why they would even could not consider looking at getting a guy when Aaron Rodgers can still show a young guy the ropes, not so much tutor him or whatever, but you have an opportunity to watch him while he's still in his prime, maybe sliding down that slide.
Favre's last year in Green Bay, you guys, maybe this is last year, second last year, you remind me. You guys had one more great season after you drafted Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
You guys, with Favre. I think it was his last year. His last year there. That's what I thought. You guys made a conference championship game?
Yep.
Okay. Did Aaron help you guys that season? No.
No.
He didn't play because Favre never missed anything.
Exactly.
Favre never missed time. You think a star defensive end in his third year, which is what that pick would have been at that point in time, would have helped you guys? You think you guys could have been a little bit better if in that season if you hadn't drafted Aaron Rodgers? That season. That then, right then and there.
Yeah, I see where you're going, Nick, but you can't play the game that way.
Well, I understand that.
Because if Brett would have gone down, we would have had Aaron.
Of course, and it ended up working out great because Aaron Rodgers is Aaron bleeping Rodgers, and he's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, and he won a Super Bowl. But Aaron Rodgers, the next one, is not going to be available in the late first round of this year's draft. If Tua Tagovailoa somehow falls and he's available like Aaron was, a guy who could have gone number one overall and instead falls to the 20s, then sure, Green Bay, do it. And Brian Gutekunst, I understand you saying this because you want a team to maybe trade with you or trade to try to feel, oh, we got to take a quarterback. You don't want to give out accurate information. But if the Packers draft a quarterback this year, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I am as angry as I've ever been. And I know Favre was probably pretty upset about it when they did it then, but at least with Brett, you had seen not only the play trail off, but you also wondered, how close are we? Like, are we a championship team still right now? Packers made the conference championship game 2 months ago. They wouldn't be drafting a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers' insurance in the first round. They would be drafting a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers' ultimate replacement in the first round. You're too close with too few title chance years left. And the fact of the matter probably is this. Packers about to be in the quarterback wilderness for the first time in 30 years.
So when would you suggest? Because when you look at teams who want to build and create winning ways, you can't wait until the window is completely closed to then now make a move. You have to make a move during.
Yeah, but usually, but I feel like because it's the Packers and because they're one of the few teams that has gone from Hall of Famer straight to Hall of Famer, we act like that is a realistic path to do it again. No matter when they draft their next quarterback, they're almost assuredly going to be in the wilderness for some time. Let's say Rodgers got hurt this year and they were sitting there at number two or three. It's like, man, we can get a star blue chipper even though we have time left with Aaron, then fine, so be it. But the level of quarterbacks that we're talking about, Justin Herbert, if he's there, to draft him with the hope being he doesn't play at all for at least 2 or 3 years while Aaron is still playing, and to, even if it's just by 2 or 3%, lessen your chance of winning a championship before Aaron Rodgers is done, to me, would be crazy.
But we're also in this age now where we don't know if we have the next Breeze or the next Tom Brady that are going to play into their 40s. Look what's going on with the Saints right now and with the Patriots. The Patriots had someone. He was waiting. You know, Brady never stopped playing. And for the last 2 years or so, the Saints had Teddy Bridgewater ready to go. We still don't know what the situation is going to be there. I think it's a tough situation when you don't know now when these guys are playing into their 40s. How much time do you really have left unless they're injury prone?
Yeah, and what that time you have left looks like. I think that is what everybody's going to have to focus on. Like, if you're a team and you're assessing your talent and Aaron Rodgers is a part of that talent, you have to be realistic and you have to look at the things that you sometimes want to overlook and say, you know what, is he starting to look a little different? Should we start preparing? Because every other position, as I mentioned, you do that for. If there is a running back that you feel like the wear and tear is surmounting, you start to consider other options.
But you don't. But the Packers just made it very clear. They believe Rodgers got a bunch of prime years left. They just made him the highest paid player ever, right? They did that a year ago. You can't do that, and then a year later, when you make the conference championship game, say, all right, we are now hedging our bets. You are all in on the Aaron Rodgers era. And I don't think you draft an injury replacement, a true backup quarterback in the first round. I think you draft your next starting quarterback in the first round. So if the story was the Packers might target a quarterback with their third round pick so they're not totally screwed if Aaron gets hurt, then I'm with you.
Sure.
The first round pick's too valuable. The first round pick is a player who, if you draft the right guy, can help you win a championship now, this year. It's the NFL, not the NBA. Rookies help you immediately if you get the right guy at the right position.
I agree and disagree at the same time because I was a second round draft pick and I was able to help that team right.
Agreed. Right. That speaks to my point that you can get high. There's going to be 60 awesome players in this draft that will help teams in the 2020 season. The Packers would be passing on someone to help them this year in order to look to a future that's murky once Aaron's gone.
Do you remember how well Ben Roethlisberger took it when, what's his name, Mason?
Mason Rudolph.
When Mason Rudolph was drafted?
Yeah, not so great.
Greg, a little in or out?
A little in or out.
Here we go. Dez Bryant has been working hard at making his NFL comeback. The latest video shows him catching passes from none other than the Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes. Greg Jennings, you in or out on the Chiefs adding Dez to their already potent offense?
I'm definitely out.
What you saw?
I'm out from what I saw. I mean, I love that they're training. They're two Texas guys getting together. Working out in the offseason, that's what guys do. But I'm out because he just doesn't fit them schematically. When you look at, they're built on speed. Their possession guy, if there was a possession guy, is their tight end, Travis Kelce. They don't need another guy like that.
No, I'm out.
I knew you were going to be in.
No, I'm out.
I knew you were in.
Why would I be in? Desperate. No, the Chiefs have some needs now. Need some corners, need some linebackers. They do not need. I don't think Dez Bryant's better than DeMarcus Robinson, who's their fourth receiver.
I agree.
Even if they lose Sammy Watkins, this is nice of Patrick Mahomes, a couple Texas guys helping each other out. No problem. You work out with them all you want. But this is a workout, not a tryout. No. I'm out. Not what the defending. And by the way, Jenna, for the rest of the summer, or once we get in the summer, will you just the defending Super Bowl champion?
Okay.
If they come up, I just feel like they've earned it.
Got it.
Honorific. It's been 50 years. They've earned it.
Hold on.
The defending Super Bowl champs at all times.
On to Big Ben now. He got some great news on Friday when doctors cleared him to start throwing the ball. Wow. Nick, you in or out on the Steelers being a playoff team with a healthy Ben Roethlisberger?
He's healthy. I'm out. Listen, the Ravens are the best team in that division, even if they're not going to be 14-2 again. And I love Tomlin. I love the defense. There's a lot to like about Pittsburgh, but I don't think the AFC North is going to be a three playoff team division. And Jenna, I know this will shock you, but I'm expecting big things from the Cleveland Browns this year. So because of that, I have to be out on Pittsburgh being the third and final playoff team from that division.
Yeah, and because of that, I'm in, because Cleveland has to find a way and learn how to win. I don't think that they are there yet. And when you add Big Ben and you look at the job that Mike Tomlin did this year, I like where this team is. Defensively, they are one of the best teams in the league. Offensively, you didn't have your guy at quarterback to kind of right that ship. I like it with Ben, healthy Ben, I like this team as a playoff team.
Okay. The NFL Combine is officially underway, and according to an NFL.com report, Joe Burrow is still the favorite to go number one, but it is too soon to call it a lock. Greg, you in or out on Joe Burrow living up to the hype as the projected number one overall pick?
You know what? I am. I'm in. And one of the reasons why I'm in, because I watched this guy in the national championship game. I watched that run. And there are certain things about guys, and everyone wants to talk about him not being as good as Tua.
Right.
And he hears all that. But he was hearing that before, and he had something to prove. He's going to continue have something to prove, and I think he will continue to get better. He will be okay.
This one hurts my heart, but I'm out. Listen, I spent a good deal of time a few days for the Super Bowl with Joe Burrow. He watches the show. We talked a lot of basketball. I was honest with him about my concerns of him as the number one overall pick. He's an incredibly nice young man, incredibly confident, handles himself beautifully. I think number one overall pick, you expect superstar. I think Joe Burrow is going to be a solid NFL quarterback. I think if you had the seventh overall pick, you'd be thrilled with him. I think at number one, whomever takes him is going to wish they had taken Tua. And because he's in a draft with Tua, who I do think is going to be a superstar, I don't think he lives up to the hype, so I'm out.
You're out.
Joey, I hope you prove me wrong, man. And you're, as I said then, welcome on the show. Call me an idiot if you'd like. He didn't call me an idiot then, but you're welcome to.
Tyson Fury beat Deontay Wilder Saturday night in a fight that lived up to the hype. This it also guy. Gave us this moment, one of the strangest things we've ever seen in the ring. Fury appearing to lick blood off of Wilder.
That's ear blood, too.
It's nothing about
that's ear blood.
Is kosher. Greg, you in or out on this?
Probably quite literally not kosher.
Like,
not just figuratively.
I'm actually in on this.
What?
I'm in on this because everything about Tyson Fury in that fight, leading up to that fight, he said that he was going to do it. Mm-hmm. Tactically, he did it. Mm-hmm. Right there, what we see, he said, literally, I want to taste blood.
So he did it.
And he's showing us, I don't know if he literally did it, but he made it appear that he did.
Greg, actually, believe it or not, I'm in as well.
Oh.
For different reasons, though. Listen, Tyson Fury is almost impossible to root for. So he has to just go full black hat. He's got to go full bad guy. So things like this only enhance the brand, so to speak.
For sure.
We're going to have the Anthony Joshua, who everyone's going to root for, or Deontay Wilder if they end up fighting a third time. You need Fury to totally embrace this persona. That's what boxing always needs, is a villain. Tyson Fury is a perfect villain, and doing stuff like this helps. He didn't bite him, which is, we've seen, you know, in boxing before. You get close like that, open mouth by the ear. And so I'm in. I think
never thought I'd hear you say open mouth by the ear on our show. Never. Well,
you know what?
What?
I'm a man of all seasons.
Yeah, you
and
are.
And it happened to apply at
anyway,
the moment.
Nobody yeah, asked, so I'm but I'm out.
I really like that you said it wasn't kosher, Jenna.
Well.
Because it wasn't.
Oftentimes, I mean what I say.
That's not kosher?
Oftentimes. No. That's not kosher.
Why would that not be kosher?
I'm going to tell you in the commercial break. Coming up, LeBron process. And the Lakers barely escaped the onslaught of Jason Tatum. To be discussed next on First Things First. Oh, we're going to close in on this. Okay.
In that grapple, Jenna, closer. Who has the leverage?
Probably Fury. All right, moving on to the Lakers and the Celtics from yesterday. LeBron James hit a clutch jumper in the closing seconds to help L.A. get the win. Just part of a great all-around game from the King, finished 29-8-9. After the game, LeBron went to the Gram to post, quote, absolutely live for these moments. Nick, can LeBron James continue to be the closer for the Lakers?
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah, I mean, listen, the guy, if at this point you don't believe LeBron's a closer, or, you know, one of, if not the best closer ever, then you're just never going to believe it. I mean, we saw the guy, Vinny, you saw it against your beloved Detroit Pistons when he was 22 years old.
Beloved.
I just give you a hard time because you're from Detroit. When he was 22 years old, the 48 special, score 25 straight to beat a team that had been the crowning team of the conference. We saw him, that was in 2007, right? We saw him in 2018. 11 years later, hit two game winners, buzzer beaters, in the same playoff run. And by the way, one series against the one seed of the conference, the other series in a seven game war where they needed every single bucket in all those wins. And if people still, I remember when he hit the second game winner of that playoff run, the question was, has LeBron James finally proved he's clutch? It's like, okay. I mean, another piece of evidence. He's hit more of these shots than anyone ever. He's hit more of these shots in the playoffs than anyone ever. He's the greatest Game 7 playoff performer this side of Bill Russell ever, statistically. We saw him hit a jumper to win a Game 7 of the NBA Finals. We saw him hit a free throw to clinch a Game 7 of an NBA Finals. And we saw him put together the greatest three-game stretch in basketball history, all in elimination games against the greatest regular season team in NBA history. So, yeah, is he the closer for the Lakers? He'd be the closer on any team at any era. So, yes, of course, he can be the closer for the Lakers. Doesn't always mean he's the closer by shooting it. Sometimes he passes it like he did to George Hill game one of the NBA Finals a couple years ago. That didn't end great when he missed the free throw. But, yeah, of course he's the closer. Of course.
There's a lot of variance in LeBron being this great closer in the way that there aren't for the other quote-unquote great closers in basketball. You talked about that George Hill play. You don't put that play in someone else's hands with the game that he was having at that point in game one of the NBA Finals.
You don't get a guy a layup?
No, you don't.
Okay.
No, you don't. You don't.
Okay.
You have 6'3 on you. You bully him, and you do exactly what he had been doing to that point, which I thought almost was LeBron's greatest game that he had ever played.
Might be.
You don't put it in someone else's hands. I'm not going to quibble with you because I feel like that's splitting hairs and that almost comes across as being a hater, which I'm not. But I will say that can he be that level of closer at this stage of his career and carry them 3 months to a championship? I would not want to bet on that because the wear and tear on his body and the responsibilities that he's going to have. When you're going to have to guard guys for two halves, 30 plus minutes a game, you're going to guard Paul George, guarding Kawhi Leonard, and then have to close at the end of games, to me, I feel like that is too much to put on a guy. Not saying LeBron James can't handle it, but 17 years, 35 years old.
Isn't he doing that now? More,
but it's a difference in doing it in the regular season compared to doing it in the playoffs where 82 games are one game exhibitions, but essentially. Seven game playoff series where the margins are a whole lot more thin and you cannot have that variance
then
anymore.
There are no closers. If he can't do it, then no one can do it.
I didn't say he couldn't do it. I'm saying, do you want LeBron having to have all of that responsibility and then close late in games?
I guess in theory, then no one should have all the response. Like, who are these guys where there's not the variance? So Kevin Durant, we obviously don't hold the injury against him. But I am old enough to remember his second to last year in Golden State, the two games in the playoffs against Houston, where he was nowhere to be found on the final possession and took criticism for it. I'm also old enough to remember with KD the beginning of the series against the Clippers last year before he went on that amazing run. KD is a great closer. He's hit two jump shots to win finals games, both over LeBron. But he had weak moments, right? Giannis has not had these great closing moments in the postseason. Steph has had a lot more bad ones than good ones. Harden has had a lot more bad ones than good ones. Kawhi, your best player in the league last year, closed the NBA Finals. Closed the final two games, one in which they lost, one in which they escaped, going 16 of 40 from the field and 3 of 12 from 3. His two worst games of the Finals were games 5 and 6. So who is the best closer?
Wait. Did he just mention Kawhi Leonard and talk about closing and not mention the series clinching shot from the corner?
Accurate,
but not complete.
No, he did. In round two, he hit the game winner in game 7.
And here's what I'm saying. If we're talking about LeBron being the greatest closer ever, one of the greatest closers ever, here's what I will say when the air is thin. When you're saying that he's the greatest player ever, greatest closer ever, here's a counter about me saying that you don't want him to have all of this extra weight on him because of the advanced years and because of his body. Magic Johnson, great closer. Didn't have to worry about defending anybody, really, because of the team around him. Michael Jordan, greatest closer ever, greatest player ever. Later years, he had Scottie Pippen as someone who could guard the Reggie Millers, the Penny Hardaways. Michael was guarding Clyde Drexler. Michael was guarding his position. Don't do that. Scotty wasn't ready.
Okay.
What I'm saying is Michael in later years had someone at a comparable position who could take on a load to where he only had to do it the last 6 minutes
of the
game.
Okay, but just real quick.
If you're asking LeBron to do this for 35 minutes a night, 3 or 4 playoff rounds, you're asking for him to run out of gas.
It's going
to
be 42 minutes a night, and he's never run out of gas before. But I'm just curious.
Never run out of gas before?
No.
Okay.
To be fair, he had the 2011 finals, and if you think that was exhaustion, I'll take it. I'd love to call that
exhaustion. No, that was just choking.
Yes, correct. But I'm just curious, instead of history, because I shouldn't have brought that up, the history comment. Who's the best closer in the NBA today? Today.
Right now?
Right now.
The guy who led his team last June. Not the guy who didn't make the playoffs last year.
So say it. I want you to just say it on television. Who is the best closer in the NBA today? We have the date of the show right there. It's February 24th, 2020.
Bring the camera here. Bring the camera here.
Yeah.
Bring the camera here. Kawhi Leonard is the best closer in basketball.
Okay.
Today is February
24th, 2020.
Kawhi Leonard led his team past the Golden State Warriors in the previous NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard, since he started playing basketball, since Kawhi Leonard has become an elite player, has won 2 championship rings and 2 NBA Finals MVPs to LeBron James's 1. So if we're going to talk about who's done it more recently, more better, you can honestly make the case that Kawhi Leonard is better at closing than LeBron.
Okay, I'm glad you made that case. That is thrilling, and I cannot wait
to
tweet it back to you.
No further questions, Your Honor.
I cannot
rest
wait.
This case.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.